three-fourths human with Kevin, Cat, and Sluggo and AI.
No need to thank me. Just remember, HR can't fix bad banter. Only you can. Carry on.
All right, that's a great way to start with episode 125.
I don't know. Sure. Yes, I think so.
Is that what we're on? 125?
Let's just say it.
Yes.
This is 3/4 human. That. I am Kevin Ryder. That is Sluggo. That is Cat Corbett. That is Cornelius. Hey, Cornelius.
Boy, Cornelius reporting in. Let's see if you three can make it through one episode without a complete debacle. Uh-huh. I'm taking bets.
And the other person on your screen is our old friend Matt Money Smith.
Yay.
Hello, everybody. Yay. How are you, Matt?
Thanks for having me. This is exciting.
Of course.
It's very exciting. It's great to see your faces.
We have had so many people say, hey, when is Matt Money Smith going to be on the show? And we're like, well, what's he doing right now? Let's bother him at home, see if he's willing to play along. Thank you for popping in.
Yeah, it's been great. I've been listening a lot. It's been fun. You know, it's weird to think that I was there for over a decade.
That's crazy.
11 years, I think, 94 to 2005. I got there, like, if I remember right, it's probably somewhere around, I don't know, May, June of 94, and I left in August of 2005. So yeah, quite a while to spend.
Take us through that. What did you start as at K-Rock?
Yeah, so I was in school. I was at Pepperdine. I was a junior, and I had an internship at Polygram Label Group, and I worked for a woman by the name of Vicki Lieben, who was very close with Kevin Weatherly, and would get yelled at relentlessly by her, even though I worked for free. And she worked in it. And basically, my duties were to go buy her two packs of Cool Milds every morning.
That's just like grandma back in the day.
I yes. like her already.
Yeah, totally. Yes.
Yeah, she was awesome. And I had to call radio stations and just find out what their ads were every Tuesday. And they were just kind of these menial tasks that I had to do. But one day she just ripped into me, and I kind of had sort of had enough. And I think you guys each know me kind of where I'm not a big like screamer and yeller. And I just want to say, hey, Vicki, just kind of give you a heads up. Like, I don't need this. Like, I'm working for free. I'm taking 18 units. I work at the Chart House at night. And like, this is not something that I need. I love it. I love music. She just started kind of crying, and she's like, I'm so sorry. I feel like such a terrible person. Like, from that moment on, we had this like really cool relationship.
Oh,
so
nice.
It was like, that was our bonding moment. And I set that up because when Kevin Weatherly, who runs K-Rock and ran K-Rock back then, had reached out to her and said that Kevin and Bean, the interns weren't working out, that they felt like they needed to hire a position of phone screener, that they needed someone to work the phones and look for interesting people. And
that is not an easy job. That's a very rough, weird
job. A lot of pressure.
Yes. People on the other end of the phone do not appreciate you. They don't want to have anything to do with you. They don't know who you are. They want to be talking to Kevin or Bean, and you are
just
the speed bump that's
in the way.
And then
they'll tell you some great story, and you tell the people on the air it's going to be amazing, and then they get on, oh, hi.
Yes, and they freeze.
Yes.
I think, so when that happened, she's like, I absolutely have the perfect person for you. He's my intern. You're going to love him. And so I interviewed with Frank Murphy, the producer, and we hit it off, and he said, all right, I'm going to give you a call. We're interviewing a few more candidates, figure like a week to 2 weeks, I'll let you know. And I'll never forget when he called, because it was the very, very early. I'm trying to think of how I got a hold of him. Somehow they called my house where I lived in Malibu, and my roommates tracked me down at my friend Mark Sturban's house in Las Vegas because we were out there for the Grateful Dead shows at the Silver Bowl.
Of course, you were.
Right. So somehow Frank calls Mark's house. I get on the phone. I am freaking peeking. On acid.
Yes,
like, because we took some, we dropped like early, and so we would kind of be like peaking right when we got to the show. And so literally I'm talking to to Frank, and he's like, hey, we really like you. Do you think you can do it? We want you to start. And I'm like, yeah, man, I can totally do it. It's gonna
Frank,
be great,
you're
man.
Like totally purple, and you're kind of melting
your
right now.
Your aura is purple.
This is going to be so great. And yeah, that's how I got hired. Shit. Nice. I'll never forget it. And then I did two more days in the desert with the dead and came back on Monday, and I think I started the following Monday.
See, that is an attribute to Frank, because in those days, you know, you didn't have cell phones. You didn't have all the ways to, couldn't text someone. So to be able to track you down all the way in Vegas while you are fucked up is impressive. Yes. And that's the kind of job he could do.
Yeah, I was like, oh, these guys have no idea what they're in for. They have hired the wrong person.
Little did you know you fit right in. Like that was the thing.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, because I don't think did I meet all of you guys in the interview process, Kevin? I can't remember, or if it was just Frank. I remember coming to the station, but I don't quite remember how that worked.
I think I remember meeting you, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we sat in on those.
Yeah, in that shitty little corner office that mm-hmm. Frank and Jimmy worked in. And and then I started, and it was pretty gnarly because I lived all the way in Malibu.
That's a hell of a haul, man.
It was.
All the way into Burbank, damn.
And I spent quite a bit of time at my then girlfriend, now wife's home. She lived in Point Doom, which was even further.
Oh,
wow. So I was pretty much getting up around 3:30 to get
to
Burbank.
At least there's no traffic at that point in time.
Yeah, no traffic. However, right. I will say I remember it very well. I think like the first 2 months that I did the job, I got pulled over like three times, maybe four, by the sheriffs on PCH because they just assumed I was a drunk kid.
Sure.
At 3:30, right. I'm the only right. car. And finally, right. it was the same cop that pulled me over like the third or fourth time. And he's like, I was like, dude, how many times are we going to do this? I'm going to work. I get it. If in any other, a year ago, this would have made perfect sense for you to pull me over, but I'm going to work. And so, yeah, so I would work Kevin and Bean until 10, 11 a.m. after the meeting, get back, go to school, park cars at the chart house and, rinse,
you
repeat.
Worked
yeah. hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
We gave him the nickname just because of the college that he went to and because he lived in Malibu.
Yeah.
Matt Money Smith. He must come from money.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he's just.
I assumed it had something to do with gambling.
Same.
Like you were like, interesting. That's hilarious.
I never quite remembered. Everybody asked me the origin story, and obviously the drugs will do stuff to your memory. But sure. Like I had always thought it was gambling too, because Jimmy's cousin Sal used to hang out all the time. Not all the time, but a little bit. And he and I would always go through, you'd have a paper and the paper would have the lines, the gambling lines. And he and I would bet on stuff. He had a bookie and we would bet on stuff. Like, I remember he's like, hey, I got an angle, man. Women's international soccer. They can't catch up to us. That's the kind of guy Sal was. And so we were doing stuff like that while screening calls for What's Your Deal and those caller driven segments.
No, I remember we just went, oh, Pepperdine, oh, he's got
fancy.
Money.
Like,
that is the dumbest way it could have come about.
Yeah.
I had a friend who went to Pepperdine. He was not rich. He definitely was not.
No,
of course
not. I can remember, lamenting my lack of cash and how, every cent I made at K-Rock and at the chart house and working at admissions and all of those things I was doing to try to make ends meet and eat and pay rent and, I remember talking to Adam Carolla about, he's like, how are you? This job's got to pay shit, man. What are you doing? Like, how are you making money? I was like, I park cars. And I'm doing this while we're smoking cigarettes in the back of his probably 1988 Toyota Supra. The hydraulics had gone out on the hatch, so it was propped up by a 2x4. And he and I are just bitching about how little money we're making.
That's amazing.
And how we deserve so much more.
Seriously.
Yes.
Why were the two of you in the back seat of the car?
Because we smoked. And so it was, imagine like it was a hatchback. I remember it. It was at the 3400 Olive Building, I think is where we were at the time. And, God forbid you give everybody a parking spot in the garage. You guys got to find street parking. And some days, and so you'd be scattered all over. And so one day Adam got like that front spot right by the driveway. And he's like, hey, you want to have a cigarette? And I was like, yeah, let's have a cigarette. And so he just popped his hatch and we just sat in the back.
Yeah.
And,
we're
smoking
hatch,
cigarettes like
right.
Kelly Leak and Bad News Bears and having a good time.
So how long did that last, the phone screener part?
That lasted not very long, because when I graduated college in 1995, I needed a job. Like you said, I don't come from money. I didn't have money. And if I wanted to stay in California, I needed to figure out work. I think K-Rock offered me 17 grand and Trip was just like, we'll figure it out. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? And they're like, we'll figure it out. And I was like, okay, I don't think I can live on 17 grand. So that's probably, and he's like, well, that's all I got in the budget. So it's either 17 grand or we're not doing it. I was like, okay. And then I had two labels that wanted to hire me. I interned for Vicky and a guy by the name of Bill Carroll, and Bill had a position open at London Records. Yeah, Billy C was the best, man. Sadly, I lost both of my the people that basically set me on this course, you know, in the last few years. But Bill wanted to hire me, and a guy by the name of Terry Ansaldo wanted to hire me at Maverick Records. And so when I had those two, Maverick was offering me a little bit more money, but I asked Bill if they could, and I positioned it like this. I was like, hey, if you guys write the, I think this is a total write-off. So you pay for it up front, but I think you can write it off. If you can get me Lakers season tickets, I'll sign with you guys, even though Maverick's offering me more money.
And so I can't believe you have the balls to throw that down. Like, who are you?
I love
who
that.
Are you?
Oh, and so, I bring it up because so I ended up getting the Lakers season tickets.
Nice.
I signed with London, and that's how Zeke and I became very good friends.
Amazing.
Because I would take Zeke to all the Laker games.
Right on.
And that's how we got very close. Also, we worked in the music department together while I was doing Kevin and Bean.
He was just as insane about music and everything, and he ended up starting Music for Your Own Backyard, which was an awesome local show. And so, yeah, he's still very popular. There's another guy we need to get on at one point or another.
Yeah, those shows on Ivar, at Club Ivar, were so, like, we had Jimmy Eat World there when they were, like, had just gotten dropped by Capitol, and they were pushing Clarity. I remember having Fu Manchu there. I want to say Failure played there. Like, we had the coolest freaking bands.
Amazing.
And I say we, just, I had nothing to do with it, but I just went to every show. You know, we were super tight. And so I was at all of these shows in this tiny little bar. And that was the cool thing about K-Rock, is when you have that platform, you know, people, they gave you things. And they Jimmy Eat World would play your club, even though you're not paying them very much. And it's a 75 person venue, and it was just so rad, all the stuff we were doing when we were between 19 and 22 years old. So there was just this tiny window where I was only doing records. So I was doing college radio for London, and then Jimmy left to go do Ben Stein's Money, or to do the Man Show.
Jimmy Kimmel, he's talking about.
Yeah, sorry, Jimmy Kimmel. So Jimmy and I got along great because we were kind of in the same proximity. And Jimmy was doing sports and I was into sports. And so we would rap about what was going on in sports and stuff as he was preparing his sports reports. but when Jimmy left, you can pick this up, Kevin. I don't remember. You hired somebody right away, I think, and it didn't work out. Or was there an on-air car? I don't remember how that all happened. With Jimmy leaving and somebody, I think his name is Paul, right? Paul, I want to say Paul Action Jackson. Does that sound right?
Yes. That guy was the worst. That guy was the worst.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's what we all expect to hear about ourselves when you start at K-Rock.
Yeah, right.
After about 2 weeks.
Completely forgotten about that guy. Wow.
Yeah. Where is that guy?
Not in radio. He's the worst. So that guy replaced Jimmy, and I think we were at your house, Kevin, or we were somewhere, and it was the three of us. It was me, you, and Jimmy, and we were drinking beers, and Jimmy, you were bitching about Paul, how bad he was, and I think Jimmy just said, well, freaking fire him and let Matt do it.
Yeah.
And and I already had a job, and I'm working records, and Kevin was just like, would you do that? And I was like, I don't know. I think so. I think I would do that.
I'm used to doing 420 things at once. Why not?
Amazing. Yeah.
And so that's how.
But at that point, you would have had to drop all of the record stuff, right?
So this is what happened. So I was already doing the records, and I said, yeah. And so Kevin, you were like, let me figure it out. And so you and Bean and everybody had come up with this idea that, well, why don't you just come in? You were like, what time do you get to work? And I said, I get to work between 7:30 and 8. And you're like, okay. Come in and do a sports report at 6:55 and just do one. And if we want to replay it, we'll replay it. But at least we'll have sports somewhere. And that seems like the best place to do it. And I was like, all right. So that's how I started. And I got paid $50 a show. And I would get up early, really early. Because I don't know what. somehow my shtick was I just loved recording stuff off the local sports reports because they were so janky and they'd get the weirdest quotes and the people that were anchors were kind of bad at what they did. And so I would cut all this sound up on VHS tapes and play it back. And that kind of became, so I would get up at like probably 4:35, prep for sports, stop, do my 6:55 report, drive to Beverly and Martell to my Slash Records office and get to work.
What a weird mix of gigs that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, on your way to work, can you stop and do a sports report for us?
On the radio?
Right. And so the record label was like, yeah, that's cool. I mean, shit, you're going to be at K-Rock. I mean, it's the most important station in America for what you're doing. So why not have you inside the building? Because they had kind of known that I got along, you know, that while I was doing Kevin and Bean, I was also doing music department stuff. I was working because Darcy had left. Lisa had not been hired yet. And so Gene Sandbloom, who was the assistant program director at the time, he's the one that reached out to Zeke and me and was like, hey, we can use you guys. You're in college. You listen to music. Turn us on to stuff that you're into and come into the music meetings on Tuesdays. And I'm going to teach you how to schedule. And like Gene was super cool about that. And that was like the raddest thing ever when I was that age. And I'm walking out with boxes of CDs because he told all the record labels that I was part of the music meetings and stuff. And so next thing you know, like I'm living with five other guys in Malibu and these boxes are showing up with, what's this? Some band called Weezer. It's the Blue Album. And this is, and like all of these CDs that aren't released yet are showing up into this house with, nice. And we would just sit there and listen through it and listen to all these records. And it was so freaking cool.
And how awesome to be getting the feedback from your roommates on it too. That's
so this is funny. I say this and they will deny this till their death and they are so full of shit. Like I can remember I brought up the Weezer record because I remember that was one that really hit me, that I was like, holy shit, this band is different than anything I've heard, and this is so cool. And I remember playing them in our living room, which was disgusting. I remember on the little boom box we had, I was like, you guys got to hear this record. And I remember playing them Circ Wax America and Sweater Song and Buddy Holly, and they all looked at me like I was crazy. They're like, the best one like that, though, is, and again, just jump in and interrupt me. I'm running my mouth.
No, please.
The best one I remember like that was I was in the music meeting. It was me, Kevin, Gene. I think it was just the three of us. And Terry from Maverick came in to play Alanis, You Ought to Know. And I was sitting on the couch and he played it and nobody said anything. And I said, that's the best fucking song I've heard in like 2 years.
Yeah.
Kevin looked at me like he wanted to stab me.
He's like, there's no way we're going to play this stuff.
Do you think of me when you fuck her?
And so I could tell that he was not happy that I said that. And so meeting goes on and he's like, hey, here, Matt, take this copy, listen to it, you know, live with it. Tell me what you think kind of thing. He's like, that's awesome. I love it. So he gave me a single of You Ought to Know. This is probably like 2 months before it comes out. Right. And he leaves. And I remember Weatherly saying, don't ever do that. And I was like, don't ever do what? And I'm just a dumb kid. He's like, you can't walk away from that. He goes, if I have you sit here, you're part of the K-Rock music team. And when Terry leaves, he's going to go tell Freddie, demand that K-Rock thinks Alanis is the greatest song they've heard in 2 years. And we can't have that. We lose all of our, he goes, look, it is the fucking greatest song I've heard in 2 years. He goes, but we have to have the leverage. Like,
yeah, he's not wrong.
He goes, gotcha. And so I was like, and so that was one of my lessons learned.
Right.
So I took that CD, drove straight to my, to Carrie's house, to my now wife's house. She lived with four girls and I played it for them and they all said the same thing. They're like, this is terrible. This is terrible.
They said what?
And I was like,
really?
I was like, you guys are all crazy.
It was one of the most divisive songs in alternative radio, and a lot of places did not play it. Did not. I worked. Yeah. I was an intern at a station, and I remember all of the guys absolutely disgusted with it. And I was like,
I was
what?
No way. That's funny. Yeah, yeah.
So, I loved it.
So stunned. I'm like, here's someone telling how they feel and saying it, and just very super modern, just of the moment. And I'm like, that's what we're always looking for.
So, I remember having a conversation about that song and saying, you know what? I think it has enough guitar in it that we can get away with playing it.
Yeah.
Because we were trying, at that point, we were trying to figure out, can we play this or not?
Right. Yeah, to me, it was just the angry attitude that punched through. I ended up being really annoyed by her after all every fucking record.
Well, can I just set the stage, though, also, because a lot of people still don't realize that, especially in rock or alternative radio, women are so tiny, 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 diminished. In fact, you would never, ever, 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 ever play two female vocalist bands back to back. Never. You would never play No Doubt and Garbage back to back. If you did that, you'd probably be fired. Like, you would never, ever. So, you know, subliminally, hey, that's, you know, some bullshit sending that message out. But that's, and frankly, it's still that way. It's still that way.
Yeah, it was a rule. So there's a program called Selector that you drop every song in every single place where it plays at that exact moment of time during the day. And when I was music director, you know, you schedule music. And so you can set rules. There's certain rules of how often do songs turn over that are in certain categories. And you can't, it won't let you place the song if it violates one of the rules. And one of the rules that was set was no two female artists.
Why is that? I'm sorry to be dumb,
but why is that? The patriarchy, Kevin. The patriarchy. Do I have to go down this road?
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was that simple.
Like Kat said, there weren't very many female artists for a very long time. And so that was way back when. No, but so I want to say, though, happily, and I'm very happy about this, when I was scheduling Jack for the network, Jack FM, I came across that rule that was in Selector, which is Music Master now. And I said to Gary Wall, I said, I ignore that rule. Fuck that rule. And he's like, good. I didn't even know it was still in there. No. Ignore that. So at least it's moved forward, and a lot of people that have their hands on the music of that's being scheduled and programmed now are beyond that absolute bullshit right there.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of rules. I mean, they, especially, mm-hmm. When Kevin came, Kevin brought that, you know, very specific style of programming, that mentality to, we are going to program this formerly free-for-all, do whatever the hell you want radio station in a manner that we ran Q106, you know, the top 40 down in San Diego, and it's going to work. And so it was no females. You couldn't play, you had to have a rock song every other song. Like, if you played, you couldn't play Depeche Mode and The Cure back to back. You couldn't play like that. Like, there was, you always had to have what he called an anchor. And like, the anchors were Nirvana, Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, like that. I remember we played, there are certain songs that I hate with the intensity of a million burning hot
suns. Can you
suns.
Tell us?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because they fit that rock rule. Oh. And whenever you got stuck in a spot, you're like, bloop. And Are You Gonna Go My Way might be the worst song.
Why are you going to pick on Lenny? Come on now.
Yeah.
But it's just a scheduling thing. It fit. It wasn't grunge. It wasn't metal.
It's a great
it wasn't
song,
rap
but when
rock.
You have to keep putting it in, it's annoying. Yeah.
It was
it's
just
not Let
vanilla.
Love Rule. Yeah.
Yeah. It was exactly. It's not Let Love Rule.
Yeah.
All Mixed Up by 311.
Oh, yeah.
May It Burn and Never See the Light of Day Again.
Agreed.
That's another one. It's so like Man in the Box. That's another one. I don't know. Like some of the other Alice I'm fine with, but Man in the Box was another one because, you know, we would do these research tests and you would play and these things are wild, man. They would always be down in Anaheim and I'd have to go monitor them and you'd get like 500 K-Rock fans and they'd be 250 in each room and you would play them these 10-second clips. Oh, I got great stories about this too. You would play these 10-second clips of songs and then they would rate them 1 to 5, you know, or 1 to 10. I don't remember what the
this is how radio stations figure out what music to play.
Which is honestly such
across
bullshit
the country.
Because the human mind
reacts
to things in various ways, not just I like this song. Like, I know this song. People get so excited when they know it. They may hate the song, but they're excited they know it and will mark higher.
Right.
So I don't trust testing
very
at
true.
All.
Yeah. No. Zeke and I were not into it, and we started fucking with it a little bit, unbeknownst to our
Yay!
Bosses. But so we would have these big tests, and like the same songs would always come back, and I would get the results, and I'd be like, okay, come on, man, this is the year that Self Esteem and Man in the Box, they're finally going to drop down, and I'm not going to have to fucking play them 20 times a day anymore.
Yep.
And nope, there they are. And here we go. We're doing the same.
Smells Like Teen Spirit is still number one. I've seen some tests recently, and it is still number one by far. Which, yeah. Great. Amazing.
Honey, I played A Man in the Box yesterday. It's still around.
I played all the time.
Yeah, still. Sure.
That was actually the song I cheated with, by the way. That was the one that I got in trouble for playing on the air from Andy and Lewis, that song.
That's...
And I got so tired of it. I'm like, can I not play this anymore? Can I just please not? And they're like, no,
right.
It's huge.
It is, and that's what happens. So those things test well, and you end up playing them. I would, if I had to guess, I would imagine, because back then when I was music director from 03 to 05, Self Esteem was the song that we had played most in the history of K-Rock, sure. And I would imagine it probably still holds.
Still
it
is. Might
still, or maybe so it's too. Red Hot's like Can't Stop or something like that, which again, push that thing away
off
forever.
With you.
So we had Nine Inch Nails. March of the Pigs.
Yes.
And for those that are familiar with it, you know it. For those of you that don't, I would recommend going to listen to it because it's like two songs in one. So it starts with this very heavy, and it's the first like minute of the song. And so that happens. And then all of a sudden, because Trent Reznor is a musical genius, everything stops. There's this eighth to a quarter second of silence. And he sings, doesn't it make you feel better? The pigs have won. And it's this very catchy little chorus that's probably, I don't know, I'd say when you take three of them that are in the song and you push them together, it's probably 15 seconds max.
Right.
And the song is like 3 minutes. So we would test the verse and it would come back 30th. We would, then the next week, we would test the chorus and it would come back first.
Right.
And then the next week, and Weatherly would be like, I don't know what the fuck's going on with this song, man. Like, people can't make up their fucking mind. It's driving me crazy.
It's the greatest example of loud, quiet, loud. And if you get the chance, just watch the video because the video also goes along with it. It's absolute chaos. And then it drops to like almost a behind the scenes type of thing where everybody's just like waiting for something to happen. And then it starts again. It's thrilling, that song.
Money, I do want to talk to you about a couple of things that you were involved with as, I believe, music director, and one of them is Morrissey.
Fuck that guy.
Have to cancel.
Fuck that guy, man.
You probably should to keep in line.
What happened in Inland Invasion?
That's the one. So, yeah, I was music director when we did Inland Invasion with Morrissey as the headliner, Stone Roses, Billy Idol, trying to remember who else was there. It's 120 degrees out.
Yep.
It's miserable. And show's going great, you know, sold out, great lineup, very excited about everyone who's playing. And the Stone Roses were not happy about their slot. They felt like they were being slighted, that they were on way too early. And so they were already kind of in a bad mood, right? Because I think it went Stone Roses, Billy Idol, Morrissey was the final three. And for whatever reason, they were pissed. And so right before Stone Roses go on, we get word that Morrissey's not coming. And we're told that, and we're just like, oh, fuck. You know, you got to make the announcement to the crowd and figure out. So we're...
How much time was that exactly? Was that like an hour?
No, it was probably a little bit more than that. Because the Stone Roses hadn't played yet. Billy Idol hadn't played yet. And then Morrissey was supposed to follow them. So yeah, he was probably supposed to be on in like an hour. Let's say 90
minutes. Can I do the lineup here? Let me just tell you who was. It was Morrissey.
Oh, perfect. Here we go.
Susie Sue from Susie and the Banshees. Devo, Billy Idol, Tears for Fears, Missing Persons, Flock of Seagulls, X, Franz Ferdinand, The Killers, Muse, Death Cab for Cutie, and The Walkman. That's what I found.
Damn. I'd go see that lineup now.
Same.
It's an unreal
show.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So we're game planning backstage and trying to figure out who's going to make the announcement that Morrissey's not coming. We're trying to figure this out. We're working with the promoters of, are we going to, how do we do this? Refunds, Morrissey's, we're working with the record label. Is Morrissey going to play a show for us as a makeup show? And as we're putting that all together, I hear the Stone Roses get announced on stage and Ian grabs the mic and he goes, he ain't fucking coming. And I go,
it was the greatest to be in the audience and watch that happen live.
Hey, all you fucking twats. He ain't fucking coming. How's that fucking feel? Morrissey ain't fucking coming. And I just went, you cocksucker. And the whole place is pissed.
Boom. Yeah.
And everyone's just angry and yelling at everybody else, trying to figure out who they can take. Who let him? Who told him? We had to manage this and we can't manage our message. And
it's absolute chaos backstage. Yes. Absolute chaos. Yeah.
And so the Stone Roses do their show, their set, which was incredible. And then Billy Idol comes on and saves our ass. And Billy grabs the mic when he gets on and goes, "Hey, fuck Morrissey. He's missing the party of the year." And he like rattles off all the bands that have been incredible so far. And he's like, "All you better stand up and get your asses moving. We're going to close this thing out." He goes, "I should have been closing it out anyway." And he just freaking blew it out.
Billy is the fucking best. He really is. Yeah, he's got that show on Sirius. It's 2 hours every other Tuesday, and he just brings it in. Everything he does in the business is incredible. He's just, and he's so for real, and he's, fuck, man.
Oh, he saved our ass. Yeah. He saved our ass. Like, because everybody was like, fuck that guy.
Yeah. And Billy always brings it. So he's on stage to do it more than he would have, Moz would have. Yeah. So it's nice.
So, but it was so funny just to see everybody's face as soon as you hear the guy go, "He ain't fucking coming."
And we all knew that there was a chance he wouldn't come because this is what Morrissey does.
Course.
Like, you know, I think anyone these days knows. I mean, you should expect that he's not coming. Like, I saw the Darker Waves Festival, and he's, like, the headliner. I'm like, yeah, but is he really, though? Like, I'm just going to...
Smashing Pumpkins are.
Yeah. Like, that's how that's going to go.
Kevin, share your idea for Morrissey that I believe... I've been repeating this everywhere. I think it should be done.
Well, you know how people use holograms, and there's a big question of would you go see an artist that's a hologram and not in person? They should do that with Morrissey. And then he'll always make that stage.
Yeah. Yes. Right.
And it'd be awesome to see a Morrissey hologram show. That's a cool thing in itself.
The hologram will show up at least. I mean, there's that.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be worried the hologram wouldn't show up, actually. Yeah. They could make sure if you actually programmed it to be Morrissey, it probably wouldn't show up.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Put Billy Idol on instead. Fuck it.
Yes, and one other question I had for you, Money, and that is talking to Rodney Bingenheimer about his show being on in the middle of the night.
So, Rodney's show, I mean, you guys, Sluggo, you probably remember. So I don't remember. I don't know the actual schedule of how Rodney went from this spot to this spot to the and where his show got moved. But when I was music director, he was on Sunday nights.
I might be able to. So Rodney was on because we had Loveline on Sunday nights. So Loveline would run 10 to midnight. So Rodney was on, I think, 8 to 10 kind of thing.
Okay. Yes. That sounds right. So Rodney's on 8 to 10. And Gene comes to me and says, "Hey, I need you to call Rodney." I said, "Okay, what do you need me to talk to Rodney about?" And Rodney and I were fine. You know, he'd be at shows and he'd ask me to get him tickets and that kind of stuff. And so we had the relationship was basically Rodney asking me for stuff and me giving him CDs and giving him, getting him tickets and things like that. It was a very one-way relationship. I never really asked Rodney for anything, but it was cool to talk to Rodney, whatever.
Sure.
So Gene says, "Hey, I need you to call Rodney." And I go, "Okay, what do you need me to do?" He goes, "I need you to tell him that we're moving his show."
That's Gene's job, man.
I was like, we're doing what? He's like, "Yeah, I need you to tell him we're moving his show. And I want to say we moved it either to midnight or to 2 a.m.
Again, I would like to step into this pile of shit right now. Because when Zeke left his show, Music From Your Own Backyard, was Wednesday nights at midnight for a half hour. And I... wanted to do when he left, I was like, someone needs to take over the local show. We have incredible talent here. Someone has to carry the torch after Zeke did such a great job. However, I was like, I am not doing a show that is buried in the ass end of the night. It's not happening.
Right. In the middle
of
the week.
It took me over a year to wear Weatherly down, where I was like, dude, Sundays, specialty show days. Like, put me on. I was like, put me on before Rodney. Just give me, you know, just give me an hour or whatever. But I'm not doing the show at midnight. Like, I refuse to start. No, I'm not putting it in place because I know I'd be stuck there. So I just basically held him hostage, was like, I'm not doing it. So then he's like, all right, we're going to put you on Sunday for 1 hour and we're going to bump Rodney. And so that's what happened.
Oh, I'll kill you. I'll sue you all over penny feathers.
That's basically what he said to me, Sluggo. Like, yeah, you know how sure. Rodney delivers? Yeah. He was yeah. so
tell us
angry.
How it went exactly.
I can't do the great Rodney impression.
Right.
He's like,
give me the words.
Who the fuck are you? Who the fuck are
Did
you?
Did he really say that?
Yeah, that's exactly what he said.
Oh,
he goes,
my
Who
God.
Who the fuck are you?
Wow.
You're a fucking no one.
Oh,
You've
man.
Fucking been here for fucking 5 minutes.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, Rodney, look, this ain't, I'm sorry, man. I go, this is just, it's what it is. I mean, we want to keep the show on. We appreciate, fuck you. You do not.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. I was like, thanks, man. Wow. This is great.
You don't
great.
Hear very many stories about Rodney like this.
Yeah, that's why mm-hmm. Gene passed it to Money.
He knew. Gene knew, and man, was he pissed. You got to be fucking kidding me. And I was like, oh, boy. Yeah, and it was, so
rough,
I was like,
dude.
Man, that sucks. Rodney hates me, and you know, and I'm the music director, and he's going to tell all these bands that the music director of K-Rock's a piece of shit.
Yeah, don't listen to that. Don't bring your music there. Take it to the other station.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Can I also something with the money and the music? Because Money, when he was music director and I was doing middays, I had this feature of playing, like, my pick or whatever it was, and we needed a name for it. And it is Money's idea. And I still, to this day... wanted to name it Cat's Box. Yeah. And
that's
I
right.
was like, what? And it stuck. Yep, and I was stuck with it because of Money.
Yeah, people loved
it's
it.
All your fault.
Yeah, the people love Cat's Box. That's what that's
yes,
listen, ask
they
anybody.
Do.
They all
get
say the same
line.
Thing. Love it. Cat's Box. Amazing. Want to get that every day. That's a daily. You can get it every day.
So there.
Yeah, oh, Cat's Box was great. That and you know, it's funny, like that stuff, that was sort of the highlight of you know, you schedule music and you're excited and you break bands and you realize they get to realize their dreams, and K-Rock's a big part of it. And I think that was always sort of the tough thing when you're going to these shows and all the hipsters are like, F you guys suck. And it's like, yeah. So I worked on both sides of it. I worked at DreamWorks right. for a long time. I worked at PolyGram for a long time. Guess what, guys? The bands want to be on K-Rock. I hate to break it to
right.
you, but they yes. want to make money. They want their yeah. records to be played. They yeah. appreciate you. You're super cool. You're hipster, yeah. but they love playing the Troubadour. They'd rather play the Will Turn.
Right.
They love playing the Will Turn. They'd rather play, you know, whatever. Pick your next set, the that's Universal right. Amphitheater. Like, that's yep. just the way bands are. Yeah. So
of course. So they aren't doing it. They're not. That's why I always said they're not going to go in the studio and record something and put it out just so no one listens to it and it doesn't
not
get played.
Not one band. They all want to end up
no,
at the Forum.
Ridiculous.
They all want to end up there.
Of course.
That is what
yes.
it is.
Stupid
yes.
thinking. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you can take the coolest of the cool. I mean, now I guess the one yep. band I worked with that really didn't give a shit was Sleep. They really didn't give a damn. They were like, whatever. Here's our record. We're turning it in. It's one song and it's 48 minutes. Yeah, I know. It's called Jerusalem. Okay.
Oh, man. They were better than Tool in that respect. You know, Tool's like, here's our new single. 9 minutes. What?
Yes. Sleep. One song. 48 minutes.
I love it.
Put
it's
it in
Jerusalem.
High rotation right now. Yeah.
Go have fun. So yeah, but like Cat's Box, Jed's Catch of the Day, those were always the highlights, man, when we could, you know, if whenever Cat would come in or Jed would come in and kind of brainstorm like, hey, what do you got? What do we got? It was always fun to kind of go through the stuff that we all wanted to get played, but the powers that be wouldn't let us play it, and it was our little
fun. That was our workaround to do those things because
yes.
we were so passionate
yes.
about it, and also, you know, we knew about labels and budgets and all the stuff, but we still were like, we can still help move the needle forward with just like a
right.
spin. Like, we can make it happen
right.
and build their story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Can we talk about your daughter? Because who's continuing
that's so
sweet of
you to ask.
Music, the generational music, love of music.
That's been really fun. It's been a really cool deal for me. I'm incredibly proud of her. She's busted her ass, and she's been at it for about 5 years, and Kat's been super supportive and played, you know, quite a few of her tracks on Sirius, and that's been awesome. But yeah, so my daughter's name is Preston, Preston Smith, and she's just hammered away at social media. And she's got a TikTok and an Instagram that have really taken off. And that, of course, has led to, and she writes music and she records music and she plays all instruments and has her own little studio downstairs. But this social media thing, and it started at Christmas, it was going well. I think she probably had about 300,000 plus followers on TikTok when she did this little Christmas song a little rock. It was rocking around the Christmas tree, and she walked out to a crosswalk in Seal Beach and just kind of tossed this tree and played it in this crosswalk, and it just went crazy. It went viral, right? And so she kind of came to the conclusion that if I stay here, maybe there's something to where I'm at. And my her mom and her figured that out. Let's just stay here and see if it's something, if we can get in. And they did, and it got into the algorithm, and I think TikTok's at 1.5 million now, and I think Instagram's at 900,000. And got her a lot of attention, and now she's got management, and now she's got, you know, representation at the agency, and now she's in studio. She's actually gone right now up in studios working with a bunch of different producers and people and trying to figure out who she likes. And it's been, did an East Coast tour like in February, New York, DC, Philly, Boston with True Blood, all sold out, and it was freaking incredible. So
did she ever say, hey Dad, you worked at the record companies, can you give me some advice?
It's funny. So she wouldn't let me do any of that for the longest time. And then finally I was like, come on, this is a good song. Can I send it to Kat? Can I, you know, send it to a couple people? And she had, you know, and she was like, yeah, sure. And so, you know, Miles has played her on K-Rock, and Lisa's played her on Alt, and Kat's played her on Sirius. And so it's been really cool for me to get back into it where, like, you know, when I worked at DreamWorks, Michael Goldstone and I were very close. You know, Goldie, for people who don't know, is the guy that signed Pearl Jam and Rage Against the Machine. And so he and I worked on Buck Cherry and Hours and a bunch of stuff together.
Oh my God, I love it.
And so he kind of was like, hey, let me talk to her, and, you know, I can sort of give her some advice and stuff. So he did that. Jeff Sosnow, who runs, you know, A&R at Warner Brothers, also was at DreamWorks. So he was able to kind of bring her. And so I bring that up because it's been me reconnecting with all of those old, like you had Rob Goldklang on last week. When I went to Warner's, I ran into Rob. Rob and I were super close because we both came into promo at the exact same time. He got the job at Warner's right when I got the job at London. And so we both kind of came up into the record business together. Okay. And so a lot of that was due to, obviously, K-Rock. You know, these labels want to hire people that worked at K-Rock and had and in there. So it's fun to kind of reconnect with all the people that were idiots and drunks and drug addicts like I was.
Best roster ever.
That now run, like, our presidents of the label. I'm like, oh my God, I can't imagine anybody thinking I could be the president of a label. I was such a disaster. And so were you. Why are you? How did you make it here?
If I could say something too, for anyone who's listening, we're like, oh, Money used his connections for his daughter to play her music in places. I have pissed off so many people in my career for not playing their kids' bands on locals. Like, it's never about the friend of somebody. Like, no. There's always the disclaimer, if I don't like it, I'm not playing it. Like, we're talking like major bands who have sent me their kids' music, and I'm like, yeah, no, it's just not going to happen. Because then I would be compromised, and I'm not putting my reputation in line for your kids' band who's just like, you know, screwing around.
Mediocre.
Exactly.
At best,
so that's not happening. And the thing is like, we just, that's how everybody works, you know? And so, you know, Lisa and I, when we worked together very closely, we were always just on the same page with that of absolutely not compromising anything. And they have to be that good
diluted
for us to play them. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And I think with Kat, like, that was the one thing that was so cool about working at K-Rock is, and, you know, Darcy was still there when I was there. And so I first connected with Darcy. And then when she left, it became Gene and Kevin. But, like, they were always, come on in, man. More people in the music meeting, the better. Like, what are you listening to? Bring me stuff. What are you playing at the frat house? What are guys playing? Like, what do you hear on campus? Like, and so when I send out her music, it is with the, hey, tell me what you think. Like, is there a hook? Do you hear it? Like, it was, that's all it was, because that's how we would have these discussions about.
Yeah, of course.
And some of them, like, when you think back to it, are so crazy that, like, I can remember, like, Lightning crashes from Live, Weatherly cut off like the first 30 seconds of it, and we're like, huh? And he cut off like the first 45 seconds of Franz. One of our bigger arguments was over Franz, because I went to South by Southwest and saw him, and that was like their big coming out party in America. And I came back and I was like, listen, we have to put this song in now, like right now. This thing, these guys are like, it's, they're so good live, song is so good. And he's like, okay, yeah. I don't like the opening. Let's just kind of start it at, you know, the dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. No, no.
It's like, I missed one thing. I have to say that I have always sort of been on the same page with Weatherly on this one, not necessarily that song, but plenty of them where we would be in those music meetings and it would be going through the intro and I was like, I just can't see this playing on the radio, but then it gets and kicks in and he and I would look at each other on a regular basis and just be like, snip, snip. And I'd be like,
yeah.
And everyone else was pissed off about it. Like, fuck you, quit fucking with the music. But I'm like, this is how it's going to work on the radio.
Right.
This is what's going to make it happen. And so I was always sort of on board with that. And we used to, Kevin, hell, you used to be the Blade. You used to edit the music that would go on the station.
Songs that are 6 minutes long in K-Rock do not need to be six minutes long.
Radio edits.
Yes.
Gotta do it, though. You just have to do it for it to work.
Yeah, there were, and everybody had like their... You know, there was always like something like Kevin's. I would always push back on him when he would say, it's not too soft. I was like, all right, Goo Goo Dolls name, too soft. And it was just such a great trump card to have.
God. Yeah. That's brutal, the stuff that would go on in those meetings. Yes.
I hounded him for at least 6 months about Lazy Eye from Silver Sun Pickups every week. He'd be like, the intro's too long. There's no chorus, Kat. There's no chorus. What? You know?
No, it's where's the hook?
So then when you would hear it, like if I couldn't make the meeting, I'll never forget this. You know, the locker area in the old Venice building.
Yeah.
I couldn't make the music meeting and it was going on and I went to my locker and, you know, he would listen to stuff at like decibel 5,000.
Yes.
The walls would be pounding.
Why I have tinnitus.
Yeah. And I heard the bass line for Lazy Eye. And I wasn't in the meeting, and I was like, "Oh!" Like I got so excited. Like I wore him down.
Nice.
Yeah, there were so many of those, like really, really cool moments. Where, especially when it's like the first listen, and everyone's like, "Oh, whoa!"
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's plenty of times where you bring in a song that you really felt passionate about it, and you were sure that everyone's going to like it, and they're like, "This blows," and it didn't go anywhere. It didn't go anywhere at all. But when it did, that was phenomenal. It just was always amazing. But you just had to be ready.
There's also songs that I fell in love with, but it took me a lot of listening to them. So it's
it just depends
on the song and the person, really. That's how it works out.
Yeah. And then there's label priorities, and because I remember Brightside, we played Brightside in a meeting when it was a UK import, and everybody was like, no brainer, and they were like, yeah, you can't play it. We're like, what do you mean you can't play it? And they're like, it's all coming together. We got a plan, and it's Island, and they've, you know, this, and then
the record company like, with their complex plans,
exactly. And then you're just like, you know. And I remember that was a case with Snow Patrol and My Chemical Romance, where My Chem, I'm Not Okay. It's like, this is
brilliant.
They're like, not a priority. They got to add Snow Patrol, like, you know, and they're giving us, you know, I don't remember who was on Chem. Might have been the Foos. They're like, oh yeah, they're giving us Foos for this, and so they really need Snow Patrol, and so, and I was like, all right, whatever, like, you know, we're playing
wheeling
the game, and that's how you learn, you know, that there is wheeling and dealing that goes on.
Money, you need to come on again. We have way too much to talk to you about.
Please. Yes.
Yeah, I know. I didn't get to do any Kevin and Bean stuff.
Yeah, you know what?
Next time, my God.
Next
time
we'll do Kevin and Bean stuff.
Yes. A lot of booze. Less drugs, a lot more booze is what Kevin and Bean was. Music was a lot of drugs, less booze. Kevin and Bean was a lot more booze and not as much drugs. That's kind of how I separate them.
I just want to say that K-Rock is a crazy place to work. And a lot of people like you would come in and make huge contributions and you're not really known for it so much.
Which is cool.
K-Rock doesn't exist without people like you making actual input that makes a difference in the radio station.
And where are you? So, but now you're back to sports money. So tell us where we can hear you.
Yeah. So I left Kevin and Bean. And I left the music director position, and I got lucky because they did not want to let me leave. I never signed my contract because it was a shitty contract. So somehow I was able, my lawyer was like, you're not signing that thing. So I was able to just throw it in the bottom drawer, and the Lakers came to get me. Chick Hearn passed away, and they were resetting their radio broadcast. And I guess Don, the guy who ran the station, and Jeannie Buss too. Jeannie was a big Kevin and Bean fan, and so Jeannie used to listen to the sports, and I guess she had brought my name up as maybe a potential person that could be part of the broadcast. And Don came and got me, and it was Kevin and Jimmy and I that were having the conversation in Jimmy's backyard. And I think it might have been a rap party or something when I brought it up to both of you guys. I was like, hey, so this is out there. And Jimmy, in a way that only Jimmy can do it, he was like, huh, like you're going to fucking stay at K-Rock instead of go work for the Lakers. And I was like, all right, well, that settles that. Yeah, it's like, I guess I'm leaving. And yeah, we were literally in his backyard when he lived in wherever, that Lake Hollywood. And we were just drinking beers. And I was like, all right. And then when I told Tripp, he's like, you have a contract. And I was like,
No, I don't.
Yeah, no, I don't. And he's like, yes, you do. I was like, yeah. And he was, and I remember he was like, you fucking asshole. I was like, I never signed a trip. He was just like, do you know what kind of position this puts me in? I was like, no, I don't. And it ended up, because Weatherly was super cool about it. Like, you guys were super cool about it. And Tripp was not, but it ended up lining up really well because Lisa was leaving HFS right when I left. And so it was like, there was no hiccup at all. And they were like, all right, get the hell out of here. We're fine. We're better without you. I was like, okay,
cool. Somebody did the Lakers broadcast for a bunch. And he also does sports talk radio on 570 AM, KLAC. What time?
Yeah, so when they hired me to do the afternoons and the Lakers. And I didn't even think twice about the afternoons. Like, I truly was like, oh, yeah, whatever, I'll do that. That's fine. All I care about is I want to be a part of the Lakers broadcast. And then I didn't realize, oh, wait, I've got to freaking do a 3-hour talk show that doesn't have music, that's just talking.
That's a lot of talking.
And so, that took me a minute to get used to. And I thank God the early tapes don't exist because it would be humiliating if they did. So it took me a minute to settle into that. So I did that. So Petros and I are in our 20th year this year.
Wow.
Petros and Money. So great. Nice. Oh, my God.
Well done.
Yeah. So the Lakers left us in 2010. I didn't go with them. I stayed because the radio show was doing really well and started doing football. And the Chargers, and so I was doing national football games, just, you know, pick a game and I'd call that game in that city for the NFL or for college and college basketball as well. And then when the Chargers moved to LA in 2017, they hired me to be their play-by-play. And so I'm in my 10th year calling Charger games as well. And, you know, did a bunch of NFL Network TV for, launched the fantasy show over at NFL Network on television, did that for about a decade. And yeah, it's just been all sports. And now, thanks to my daughter, I'm getting back into music without any, well, I guess there was some pressure attached to it, but not a lot. But it's been really fun to kind of get back into music again. I didn't realize how much I missed it.
It is addictive.
Yeah.
I love it.
It really is.
Well, you're the best. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Come back soon.
Also, these are from K-Rock. These are
you back.
Modest Mouse, signed by Isaac and everybody. And then this was the Beastie Boys set list, the actual set list from their show in September of 2004, signed by, which, you know, obviously when
2004, some of us would say.
Yeah, sorry.
Because I saw it. And I was like, I knew I was there.
This Universal? Was that what it was? Universal Amphitheater? That sounds right.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, but maybe.
Yeah. And so it's kind of cool to have, you know, all three of them have signed it.
Amazing.
So that's why they're a few of the many things I have in a closet that are there. Yeah. So.
Dude, I love him. We lost Corny, so he's gone. He was bored.
I can see that. And that's the problem with me is like anytime, you know how it is when you're in radio, in talk radio, if there's ever the slightest bit of silence, you just start talking to fill it. It's just the way your brain operates. So I never gave Corny a chance to get in. I'm sorry.
And thank you for doing that because we're sick.
Yeah, we can't.
We're good.
We need a break.
We're all good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Money. We'll have you again.
For sure.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd love it. All right. Thanks, guys.
Uno, two, tres, boom.
3/4 human with
Kevin Cat
and Sluggo
and AI.